Many people are using the FaithFi app to help provide the wisdom, community, and money management to stay on track, financially speaking. To date, over 37,000 members are using its digital envelope system, participating in our community forums, and engaging in virtual workshops. And one of the most convenient features is the ability to keep all your accounts in one place for an easy at-a-glance view. You can choose from one of three options depending on your management style, and it's available on desktop or mobile. Go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
Back in 1897, Johnson Oatman Jr. wrote a hymn that remains a favorite even today. You probably know the refrain, count your blessings, name them one by one. Hi, I'm Rob West. That well-loved gospel song contains a very important theme for the Christian life, gratitude. We'll talk about that today, and then we'll take your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. It's been over 100 years since Johnson Oatman Jr.'s death, and in his lifetime, he wrote the words to 5,000 hymns. Count Your Blessings was his masterpiece, offering comfort and reassurance with its timeless theme of gratitude to the Lord. Well, gratitude is certainly an appropriate topic at this time of year with Thanksgiving coming up. I'm sure we will all count our blessings as we gather with family and friends, remembering the goodness of God. Of course, gratitude is more than just a holiday feeling. 1 Thessalonians 5:18 says, giving thanks is an essential part of the Christian life. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. So, let's look at the hymn more closely. There's deep truth in these verses Johnson Oatman wrote over a century ago. The first verse says, when upon life's billows you are tempest tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Gratitude has the power to lift us out of fear and discouragement. Psalm 118, 4 and 5 gives a testimony of this. Let those who fear the Lord say, his steadfast love endures forever. Out of my distress, I called on the Lord. The Lord answered me and set me free. When you focus on your problems, they can seem overwhelming. Gratitude refocuses your heart and mind on the Lord. In light of his protection and provision, problems seem much less scary. In John 16:33, Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Now, verse 2 of the hymn tells us that gratitude can calm our doubts when times get tough. Here are the words. Are you ever burdened with a load of care? Does the cross seem heavy you are called to bear? Count your many blessings, every doubt will fly, and you will be singing as the days go by. Considering what God has done in your life will remind you that he loves you and will never leave you to struggle alone. Remember Psalm 23? Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Not only is gratitude effective in dispelling fear and doubt, it also helps us get our priorities straight. The third verse of the hymn puts it this way. When you look at others with their lands and gold, think that Christ has promised you his wealth untold. Count your many blessings money cannot buy, your reward in heaven, nor your home on high. We don't need to be jealous of the money and possessions of others because we know the treasure we have in the Lord is eternal, and it's much more satisfying than anything the world has to offer. The heart that treasures God with gratitude will be at peace. In John 14:27, Jesus said, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. The refrain of the hymn contains one of the best pieces of advice I can think of for Christians. Count your blessings, name them one by one. Count your blessings, see what God has done. When was the last time you took a break from the busyness of life and just counted your blessings? I challenge you to set aside a few minutes, even today, to list all the blessings you can think of, big and small. I think you'll be amazed at how many you come up with. Make this a challenge for the whole family, including your children. Here's an important reminder. It's not enough just to count your blessings. Anybody can do that. For Christians, there's a part two. Acknowledge that these good gifts are from the Lord and give thanks to Him for each blessing on the list. I promise you, it'll be a joyful exercise. Here are the words to the final verse of Johnson Oatman's much-loved hymn. So, amid the conflict, whether great or small, do not be discouraged. God is over all. Count your many blessings, angels will attend, help and comfort give you to your journey's end. Well, I hope that classic hymn encourages you to count your blessings today, one of which is that I didn't sing it for you, I can promise you that. All right, your calls are next. The number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Every day we hear life-changing stories from listeners just like you who see money and possessions as tools to invite more people into God's kingdom. Instead of chasing wealth, you've chosen to embrace God as your source of love and provision. At FaithFi, we're passionate about meeting people where they live and work through our national radio program, app, resources, and website to influence widespread positive change in our culture. Please consider becoming a monthly partner at faithfi.com/give.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
So glad to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. We've got lines open today. We're ready for your questions on any financial topic, living, giving, owing, or growing God's money. The number to call today, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. We'll probably be full with questions here in just a bit, so this is a great time to get through, get your question answered. Again, you could call right now, 800-525-7000. All right, let's begin to dive into those questions. We'll begin in Nebraska today with Ruth. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. I just had a question. I borrowed money from my 401k retirement plan to purchase a primary residence. And for some reason, my plan could not provide me with the money and instead asked me to take out a loan, which I did. And then things really got really bad with my purchase of my new home. And I'm no longer in the financial situation to be able to afford the payments. So I reached out to my plan administrator and they converted my loan from a loan to a hardship distribution, which I now am responsible for paying the 35% tax penalty. And so I guess I'm just wondering how I could avoid the tax penalty, if there is a way to do that, due to the fact that it was for the primary residence and that I was affected by weather-related damages to my home after the fact.
Yeah. Well, I'm so sorry to hear that. I know that is probably placing a significant burden on you as you deal with this. You know, the challenge is, you know, if you qualify for the hardship distribution, you may be able to miss that early withdrawal penalty. So that could be waived. You would have to talk to your CPA about that, but you still are going to have to pay the tax on it. So it's going to be still considered ordinary income. So you'd have a federal income tax on the amount withdrawn. And then beyond that, you're going to have state income taxes depending upon where you live. And it's going to, of course, be driven by your tax bracket. So they're taking out, I suspect, what is considered to be an estimated amount of federal tax plus the 10% penalty, which is the 25%, which is pretty common, plus the 10% penalty, bringing it up to 35% total. Ultimately, that's just an estimate. So what you owe to the IRS
IRS is going to ultimately determine whether or not you paid enough or you paid too much, and therefore some is coming back to you. It just depends on the plan administrator in terms of, you know, what amount is withheld. You know, so they do have the mandatory withholding, and the 10% penalty is typically not withheld up front. But again, it all comes down to who your plan administrator is and how they handle it. What I would probably do is connect with your CPA just to begin working on what your actual tax liability will be based on this not being any longer a loan, but now being considered a distribution. And that will allow you to plan for what ultimately is going to be reflected on your return, which is really when you need to settle up finally with the IRS.
Okay. I need to find a CPA then. I don't typically, I haven't had the opportunity to navigate any of this. This is the first time I do any of this. I'm completely lost.
Okay. Well, let's do this, Ruth. One of the things you could do would be to reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor there in Nebraska. This would be a financial professional who's met all of our standards to achieve the CKA designation. So they would share your values, statement of faith, code of ethics, pastor and client reference. They've been trained to bring a biblical worldview of financial decision making, and then ask for a referral to a godly CPA in your area. So that could at least get you pointed in the right direction. The way you'd find a CKA to reach out to would be just to go to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. And then click on find a professional. Again, any one of those folks would be able to point you in the right direction.
Thank you. And then I asked one more question. If because the situation with my house has gotten so kind of out of control, honestly, I'm wondering if I were to sell my home, at what point do I have to pay capital gains on it? Is it only if I make above what I purchased for, or is it if I sell before the 2 years?
Yeah. Are you filing single or married, filing jointly?
Married jointly.
Okay. So if you've lived in the home for 2 out of the prior 5 years from the date of sale, so the date you sell it, go back 5 years, if you lived in it for 2 out of those 5 years as your primary residence, you will be able to exclude up to $500,000 in gains before you pay any capital gains tax. So not just the selling price, $500,000 in gains would be set aside. So if you have less than $500,000 in gains and you've lived there 2 out of the last 5 years, you would have no capital gains tax.
What if you sell it before the 2 years?
Then you would take the selling price minus the cost basis, so what you paid for it, and then you could subtract out certain fees as well as any improvements, not maintenance, but improvements that enhance the value of the home, and you'd come up with the amount of the gain, and then whatever that gain is would be subject to the long-term capital gains rates, which for 2024, you would be looking at probably most people would fall into the 15% capital gains bracket. That would be for folks, if you're married, filing jointly. If you have taxable income between $94,000 and $583,000, it would be at 15%. And the gain itself, the capital gain, is added to that combined taxable income. So when you add the gain plus all of your other income, if that falls between $94,000 and $583,000, you'd pay 15% on that gain.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. I was looking for guidance, and I think I may have found some. Thank you. I appreciate your time. And
absolutely. Yeah. Lord bless you, Ruth. And we appreciate your call today. Call anytime. Let's go to Texas. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was calling. My wife will be 62 in August. She's 61, obviously. And I was thinking about, we were thinking about her taking her Social Security. She's retired. But we still filed jointly. I didn't know if it would be taxed since I still work.
Yeah, it certainly can be. And it's going to have to do with the amount of income that you earn. So let's start with just her taking the benefits early. So she would be taking these based on her own work record. And then you recognize that she'd get about somewhere around a 30% reduction in that benefit by taking it early.
Right.
Okay.
As opposed to being 67. I think 67 is her full retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you just need to think through that and make sure that that makes sense to lock in that reduced benefit. Now, in terms of the taxation, basically the taxability of those benefits, if you will, depends on what's called your combined income. So when you combine all of your income, if that's between $32,000 and $44,000, then up to 50% of the benefits may be taxable. If your combined income, and I suspect it would, putting it all together, exceeds $44,000, then that's going to be up to 85% of the benefits may be taxable. So you would likely, you know, be paying tax on 85% of those the benefits that she's taking.
Would that also be, if she waits till full retirement, it would be the same thing, right?
That's exactly right.
If I'm still working. So, because I was under the impression that it was not taxed if she doesn't work, but that's not true.
That's not true. No, it really has to do with your combined income.
Okay.
And when you look at, and that does include your Social Security benefits in that calculation as well.
Very good. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call today. And by the way, it's up to 50% of those benefits that would be factored into that combined income number. So yeah, take a look at that and just make sure you plan ahead for that, because that could obviously reduce what you're expecting to have come in on a monthly basis. Thanks for your call today. Back with more after this. Stay with us.
Have you downloaded the FaithFi app yet? You need to do that today, because this is going to make your life easier. Yes, you can manage your money through the in-app envelope feature, but also plan out future goals. I want to buy a house in 5 years, and I'm on track to do that. Here's also what I like. You can connect with people around the country. It's like social media, but better. Ask a question, get an answer, and share what you're learning about money and investing. So why don't you grab your phone right now and download the FaithFi app?
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
I'm so glad you're joining us today on Faith and Finance. We've got a few lines open today. We're taking your calls and questions. The number, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. All right, let's round out the broadcast today with some folks that have been holding, and we'll head to Texas next. Jeff, thanks for your call, sir. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. I really enjoy your ministry, and I had a question about debt-to-income ratio with my land flipping and splitting business.
Yeah. How can I help with that? Sure.
So I just wanted to know, what is a good ratio? Like, we have about $5.5 million in debt, and then we bring in about $1.2 million average over the last few years.
Yeah. You know, it just is so dependent upon the business itself. I mean, I would say typically kind of a rule of thumb is around 35% for a small business debt to income ratio. But, you know, it does depend obviously significantly on the business itself, the revenue, your ability to service the debt. But I would say, just kind of as a general rule of thumb, you know, that 30 to 35% mark would be, you know, ideal in terms of a healthy small business.
Okay. Well, that helps a lot. Yeah.
I appreciate it. How's the business been doing as of late?
Well, I've had a land partner for about 6 years, and it's been phenomenal. And I've bought from some of the same people several times. Now they just call me up whenever they're about to buy something, and then I just buy it from them, and they make their little markup, and I get my owner financing for 30 years at 5 to 7%. And then there's been so many people that want to get out of the cities and have their own little piece of Texas and, you know, build their house out there. And most of them have, in Wills Point area, have their own businesses.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like a fabulous business, and what an opportunity with real estate, with what it's doing, for you just to continue to build your portfolio there and just collect the income stream on that. That's excellent, Jeff. Well, listen, we can help further along the way. Don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks for being on the program today, sir. Out to Seattle. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Appreciate the time here. So my question for you, I'm almost 60. I am a retired fireman, and we are building our final house that we'll probably live in for the rest of our lives. We've been building it cash out of pocket, and we need about $175,000 to finish construction. And I ended up very recently borrowing that money from an IRA that I have. And my intent was, because I don't want, you know, I don't want to be down with payment. I was just going to pull it out, pay taxes on it, and be done with it. My accountant recommended that I borrow the money from one of my rental properties, you know, for tax reasons, and then, you know, pay back my IRA so that I have that, you know, for future need. And I'm struggling with that. I don't want the payments of borrowing money from a rental house that's completely paid off. And I don't know what would be the best route to go. Should I just pull the money from my IRA, pay taxes on it, be done with it? Does it make more sense financially to borrow the money, you know, from a rental house, pay back my IRA essentially to myself, put that money back, but then I'm, you know, I'm stuck with a monthly payment for a while. So
yeah.
That's my question for you.
Yeah, very good. It's a great question, John. And just to be clear, and it sounds like you know this, but there is no borrowing from an IRA. So you took a distribution and you're just going to get it back in that 60-day window, which is permissible by the IRS, but there are no loans, correct?
Right. That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure you were clear on that. Yeah. I would tend to come down on the side of this with your CPA, just because I think, you know, there's some real benefits to you getting that money in there. I understand you don't like to pay the interest and now you're going to have a payment. I also understand this is not an ideal time with regard to interest rates, not to mention it's not your primary residence, which I wouldn't encourage you to do. But given the fact that it's going to be a loan on a rental property, it's going to be even higher than the conventional rates for a primary residence. And yet, I think the fact that you're likely going to push at least a portion of this $175,000 up into a higher tax bracket because you're taking it all at once instead of spreading it out, number one. And number two, the fact that that money is no longer in there to continue to grow for the future, you know, I think despite the fact that interest rates are not ideal, I kind of like the idea of you getting it back in there. I mean, another approach would be kind of a middle of the road where you work with your CPA to say, what would it look like for us to spread this out over 3 years? So maybe you put back 2/3 of it and, you know, you put, you take that out, you know, in the next tax year and then the one following. Or if you want to get in under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expiring, you do it at least over 2 years, 24 and 25, just because we don't know if that ends up sunsetting, then tax rates are going up. And so you'd rather pay today's tax rates than, you know, future tax rates, because they're definitely not going lower, I wouldn't imagine. And there's a good case for them going up, because if nothing is done, they're going to sunset at the end of 2025. So that may be another middle of the road option. Let me ask you, I mean, other than the real estate assets, do you have, what are the total investable assets you have in retirement accounts?
Let me think about that a minute. I have about $130,000 in passive annual income between two rental properties and two Delaware statutory trusts. Okay. Now, that does not include my wife. Just walked away from corporate America about a year and a half ago. She's 57, and she's got about $600,000, I think, in a 401k. You know, I think I once figured out our net assets, you know, excluding our house, you know, maybe 1.6, 1.7 million, excluding our primary residence.
Yeah. Okay. And you got obviously good rental income coming in that's going to continue to be thrown off. So what do you think about that? At the very least, spreading it out over two tax years because of what I said about tax rates potentially and likely going up, but recognizing that, you know, hopefully we could get a portion of this down in a lower bracket by spreading it over 2 years, which means you'd pay back half of that this year and then, you know, have half of it in the following.
No, I actually like that idea. You know, I'm trying to balance out paying a lot to the IRS or paying it in interest to the bank. So I kind of like the idea of splitting it up a little bit and talking with my accountant about, you know, making sure I come under whatever the next tax level is to make sure we stay underneath that. So
Yeah, I mean, another kind of a third option would be to say, all right, we're going to split the difference in terms of I'm going to take half of it from the IRA, so that'd be $87,500, and we're going to do that over 2 years, so that's $43,750 this year, $43,750 next year, and then we're going to get a loan for $87,500. So now we're going to end up with interest on half of it. The other half is still in the IRA, continuing to grow for the next maybe 20 or 30 years, depending on how long the Lord has you here, which could be, you know, 3-4 decades. And so you get the benefit of that, but then half of it, you're enjoying these lower tax rates, which there's no guarantee of that down the road. So I think you've got plenty of options here to think about, but hopefully that's given you some things to consider. We appreciate you being on the program today, John. May the Lord bless you. Hey, big thanks to my team today, Sandy, Jim, and Devin. Couldn't do them without them. And we'll see you tomorrow. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Faith and Finance is provided by FaithFi and listeners like you.